I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line, the keys to using performance incentives. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, and then we'll jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time, at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement to help keep organizations off the rocks of potential self-destruction. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments and raising the hiring bar, and to assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, executive onboarding for success, leadership training for the 21st century, exploring global operations for expanding your business, sales and customer service training, and operational productivity improvement. Each of our programs helps to avoid getting stuck in shallow waters to our clients, so our clients have smooth sailing. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations. If you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track Open Line series is in response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guest. You also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, since we'll be sharing many ideas that you'll want to consider and implement with your team and trusted advisors. You can print the slides off. You'll see a print icon in the lower right-hand corner. Our special guest with us today is a good friend, outstanding business person. His name is Mark Emmer. Mark's a consultant, author, and speaker sought after by CEOs throughout North America, and he's an expert on strategic planning and performance improvement. Mark's firm, Optimize Inc., has an impressive client list, including C.B. Richard Ellis, Rio Tinto. Did I say that right,
Mark? Rio Tinto.
Thank you. Superior Industries, dozens of small and mid-market companies across the United States and Canada. The release of Mark's book, Intended Consequences. And by the way, if you have not read this book, it's a must-read book. I got into it, and I couldn't put it down. I read the whole thing in one sitting. It was covered by Forbes, CNBC, Fox, and CBS, and his weekly blog is syndicated by Vistage, the world's largest CEO membership organization. Mark also serves on several for-profit and nonprofit boards. I feel privileged to have Mark with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program begins at the end of this session. The topic will be how to invent and execute your company's future for 2013 and beyond. Mark, welcome back to OpenLine.
Thank you, Dana. Good morning, everyone. By the way, Dana, you know I've been trying to shake that label of consultant. Did you know that 90% of business people hate consultants?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, 10% are consultants. But before we dive into the mechanics of how to build a paper performance system, I just want to spend a few minutes building a business case on why the business owners on the line might consider building such a system. And, you know, there's a lot of data out there that suggests that there's a big payoff in paper performance, but that's not to say that it doesn't go without pain. And, my point of view this morning is to just give you a well-rounded perspective on the subject so you can make some informed decisions on if paper performance is right for your organization, and if so, how you might go about implementing it. And, you know, I think it's important to note that anytime you tinker at all with compensation, there is a lot of fear and a lot of angst, and you're going to get pushback from your team. So I think it's, important that you be thoughtful in how you arrange your compensation system. And so I'll share some ideas of how to go about that. Also, I would say this is a highly controversial subject. There are some business pundits, Daniel Pink and others, who kind of object holistically to paper performance. because they don't think that money is the best motivator for people. And I certainly don't quarrel with that thinking. I think that money needs to be used as a tool in combination with other tools to provide motivation. But I also think the skeptics, I think their perspective might be a bit narrow, because they're thinking in terms only of, you know, what the emotional response of the employee might be. And my point of view is what is best for the employer and the enterprise, and especially in a time where entrepreneurs are trying to build businesses that are sustainable during volatility. So pay for performance really is a business tool that supports the entire enterprise. So where I'd kind of like to start this morning is maybe with just a bit of an overview on employment as a whole. And this slide, I think, is just absolutely fascinating. And what it shows us is growth by population, by age in the U.S. Oh, I'm sorry, the bottom's cut off. I'm just noticing. So the label on the bottom of this slide is actually age ranges. So it goes 20 to 30, 30 to 40, and so on. So on the right, we see the growth of the baby boom generation. And the bars on the left would be the growth of their children, which is the echo boom. And in the middle, those numbers in decline, that is the growth of the 30-somethings and 40-somethings. And so this slide really explains why we have 9% unemployment, and yet everyone is having difficulty finding skilled labor. So I think first you need to think generally about how you view employment, and using incentives really as a tool to retain our best people and potentially attract great people. And, you know, back to my point earlier about kind of the fear of paper performance, as a general statement, this is what we find. The people who are high performers, they love incentives and they love accountability. And the poorer performers, they dislike accountability. So from a general standpoint, a lot of this speaks to your general philosophy about human capital and all of the systems that you have in your organization to develop people, including your performance management system and so on. Sorry, clicking slides here. One of the key learnings during the recent economic downturn for a lot of entrepreneurs was that it is very dangerous to have fixed costs. And in particular, when your labor is pretty much tied to, when a high proportion of your total cash compensation is in salaries and you have low incentives, what you've done is you've created a fixed cost in the form of labor. And what we kind of saw pre-recession was there were escalating costs for labor, not only in terms of the merit increases that people were providing back then, but health care, insurance, workman's comp. So kind of the business problem is that when we create fixed costs for labor, we are unable to fluctuate our labor to be in alignment with demand unless we do what? Unless we cut people out of the system. So that's not good for the employer, and it's also not good for the employees. So I think the big strategic kind of upside of paper performance is to marry your labor costs with demand so that you can pivot, you know, as the demands of your business change. Dana, do you have any questions or thoughts before I move on?
No, we're good. This is a great topic.
Right.
Oh,
okay.
My goodness.
So, you know, there are some limitations with the traditional way of paying compensation. In addition to, you know, that lack of flexibility, you know, having subjective evaluations of people really puts your company at risk, especially of those of you who are here in California where the labor laws are very stringent. I think there should be sensitivity to the fact that you know, the best practice for evaluating people is to have more objective measures where you can defend your position on why you've made certain decisions, including your incentive plan. And the other thing is that having objective measures really reinforces accountability. I hear from a lot of CEOs who are, you know, often frustrated that they can't instill a culture of accountability in their organization. So I'm going to share with you some thoughts on how to do that and ultimately have incentive pay be the end game of that type of thinking. And, you know, there's quite a bit of data that suggests that pay performance does provide an ROI. I know this will be a little hard to see. I'm going to try to blow it up a little here. But Bain does a study every year of the management initiatives and principles that consultants are talking to you about all the time. And what they've done is they've compared those that provide the highest rate of return, and pay performance very consistently is at the top of that list of new initiatives that you can put in play that will have a significant return on investment. So
that's interesting looking at the numbers there.
Yeah, that's on a scale to five, by the way, anyone who was wondering.
Huh.
Here's another study, and actually this information is a little older, but There was a book that came out, and what the authors did was they studied 2,000 companies, and they broke the companies up into three buckets: those with the highest financial performance, which are illustrated in the right-hand column; those with the lowest in the left-hand column; and then the middle 80%. And then they compared the top 10% with the bottom 10% in terms of their HR practices. And they found that the companies in the top 10% had four times the sales per employee, their market value was triple, and some of the kind of indicators we see is the top 10%, 80% of them used merit increases and had incentives tied to performance compared to 2% of the low performers. And then on the bottom row, 95% had regular performance appraisals compared to 4% in the bottom 10. So I think that very clearly articulates what some of the best practices are for the companies with the highest financial performance.
Wow, that's amazing.
So here are some of the challenges that you might face in instituting such a program. First of all, you need to make sure that the incentives are sizable enough that they actually motivate. So, you know, if you have a 3 or 5% bonus program, that just isn't enough to move the needle. And I think one of the critical points that I'd like to make today, and I think this is a real kind of trap that entrepreneurial companies fall into, is that they fail to have a credible system of measurement. So you need to have a system by which you are measuring the results of the business and you're able to articulate that to your team before you can even think about having a pay-per-performance system. So what I advocate for is that before trying to put in pay-per-performance, that companies institute some form of scorecarding. And let me try to differentiate between what I mean by a scorecard and what many organizations refer to as their KPIs or key performance indicators. We see a lot of companies who have numbers, but they tend to be financial numbers. And, of course, financial numbers have a couple of limitations. One is that they're historic. And another is that in most smaller companies, they're not in public view. There's only a few people in the organization who see the numbers and understand the numbers. So I think one of the keys for pay for performance, if you don't want to open your books, and I'm not advocating for that, is that you have some kind of midpoint. You have some kind of system where there are some numbers that your employees can see. And one of the other differences in a scorecarding system to typical KPIs is not only are those numbers public, but they're measured in real time for people to see. And you know, part of the angst that people have about compensation and bonuses is very often there are a lot of employees within a company who really don't understand how the company is performing, and they don't understand how their job relates to the strategy and future of the company. And so their traditional Christmas bonus is kind of it's it's unpredictable for them. So in a scorecarding system, what you're doing is you're providing much more clarity in the performance of business, and you're tying the roles of individual people back to performance. And the other thing about a scorecard that I think is very important is it should be a derivative of your strategy. If you decide that what's strategically important to you is cycle time, for example, then you might have a lot of cycle time measures in your scorecard. If customer service is what's important to you, then there might be customer service measures in your scorecard. So they tend to be more kind of operational numbers than what you might see in a P&L. And they're usually published, if not monthly, could be weekly or some companies even daily, so that you can react more quickly to things that are happening in your environment.
Mark, a question just came in. I encourage people to throw questions in also along the way. And it's a similar – I'm going to frame it around something that I saw in one of our clients a while back. So they went to a scorecard – one of our clients went to a scorecard system. They decided with all the employees all agreed, okay, we're not going to do the Christmas bonus thing. We're going to do it based on whatever they agreed upon. And then when it got to right after Christmas, people were complaining, well, we didn't get a Christmas bonus. And I was at a meeting. I said, wait, but you guys made far more money overall as participants in the scorecarding program than if you just had this Christmas bonus every year. And, yeah, but it's not the same. Any thoughts that had to deal with that mindset?
Yeah, and that's why I opened up the conversation with the caveat that I did. I think putting in a pay performance system from scratch is a process. And I think you need to have measurements that are accepted, that are strategically important, and are valid before you can think about pay performance. So, a matter of fact, you know, if your organization isn't doing this stuff today, I might look at putting in a scorecard in the current year and putting in the incentive plan in the following year. Because if you do both at the same time, everyone will defend their territory, and there will be not most people, but there'll be a few people who try to sabotage the scorecarding process because they're trying to protect their bonus. Mm-hmm. So that's why I view it as a process. And I think you're always going to have those people who have, because Dana, what you just described is a form of entitlement,
mm-hmm.
and that's
right.
The problem with the traditional subjective Christmas bonus is people just expect it regardless of the performance of the organization. And you know, when people come to the entrepreneur and ask for a raise because they've been there for a year, I think the entrepreneur needs to ask themselves, where's their raise? I mean, they've been there for a year. You know, the only way they get a raise is to earn it. And so I think if you want your people to be more accountable to the business outcomes, then we need to treat them more like owners and share in the profits when we do well, and potentially ask employees to share in the pain when we don't.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
So here is a scorecard example, and there's lots of ways to do this. In this example, I hope everyone can see it. You have a target in the first column, and then you have your monthly results. Some folks use red, yellow, green, or different lights or indicators to indicate where you are versus the objective. Usually, a scorecard is a company-wide scorecard, and the reason that we do company-wide is you want all the employees and all the departments to recognize the vision of the company and share in swimming in the same direction. What a lot of organizations also do is have departmental scorecards. So you may have a company-wide scorecard and then departmental scorecards that are derivatives of the larger scorecard. And then the key thing to do is to make the information very public. So it may be that the accounting department has a scorecard in their portion of the building, and sales is a different one within, their portion of the business, and so on. Some companies, they put it on flat screens. Yeah, I've seen this done in all different ways. But really, what you're trying to accomplish by using the scorecard is to change behaviors, so that everyone is swimming kind of in the same direction. And I think it's once you've done that that you can start to think about what a paper performance system would look like. I'm going to share with you one example. Like I said, there's many ways to do this. In this example, we have three buckets. One bucket is financial indicators. Another bucket is the scorecard indicators from the previous page. And the third would be the individual contributions of the employee. So in this example, you would have it weighted 50-25-25. You could do that any way you want. I typically advocate for having the financial indicators be a highly weighted item, because what we want is we want the scorecard to sync with the financial return that the company is getting. So in this example, we have a $100,000 employee with a 10% bonus potential. I actually think that number is kind of low. Typically, we want to move towards that number being higher. But then what you do is you create a and usually, you know, HR or the CFO will administer this, but you have three buckets. And the first bucket in orange being the financial, it's usually EBITDA or some form of profit earned by the company. And you might have a, I know this is a little hard to see, but you'd have a minimum threshold. So say that the business decides their EBITDA goal is a 10% increase, you could set the minimum incentive at 7 or 8 or 10 or whatever number you decide. And then if that minimum number isn't hit, then no one gets that that portion of the incentive. Then the middle bucket highlighted here in green would be the scorecard numbers. You could have, there's lots of ways to do this. Either you could have specific scorecard numbers that relate to particular departments then show up on the incentive for the employees in that department, or you could have like an aggregated score from the scorecard and that show up in this part of the calculation. And then the third bucket would be the individual contributions to the employee. So again, you could use particular measurements you have for them, or they could be kind of yes-no things. Say your CIO is responsible for implementing a new software solution. You know, did we institute this solution on time and on budget, yes or no? So the reason that I like this weighted approach is that there's a couple of things we're trying to protect against in the paper performance system. The first is that you have instances where the company performs well and you have a poor performer. If we just hand out the Christmas bonus, what we've done is we've reinforced poor performance. So in the incentive plan, the way that that would play out is because the company did well, the employee would probably get some form of their incentive, but it would be much less than a good performer. And then the other thing that we need to guard against is the reverse of that scenario, where you have the superstar employee, and the company doesn't do well, and then we pay them nothing, and we have a big chance of losing that person. So, you know, the way I always frame paper performance is it's not a perfect system. It's like capitalism itself. There's flaws in it. We have homeless people on the street. But what I like about it is the fairest way to weight the performance of people, marry that with the performance of the company, and come up with a calculation that distributes an incentive kind of in a well-thought-out way. So some considerations, all of this assumes that, you know, you've already done an evaluation of salaries and they're kind of on par with your industry or sector or what your objectives are as far as where you're paying people, and that you're regularly doing their performance evaluations, you're correcting any poor behaviors, you're certainly providing positive reinforcement to the people who are doing a great job, and you know, we're not just using the performance, the monetary incentives kind of in a vacuum. So let me walk you through step by step how you might go about doing this. The first, I think, is to gain agreement on the strategic direction of the company so that you can come up with scorecard measures that measure the effectiveness of your strategy. Then you create the scorecard and you institute the culture of measurement. You analyze the costs and benefits of an incentive plan, and along the way you're probably conducting some kind of salary survey so that you make sure that you are kind of on par.
Mark, can we go back for a second?
Yes.
The number three, analyze the costs and benefits of an incentive program.
Right.
Question came in, let's see, I got a couple questions, but a question on that one is, any thoughts or anything you can share about that? I realize this is a huge topic. And the second one is, how often do you schedule performance reviews?
Right, okay. Here is, I think, the hardest part in terms of implementing paper performance. You have to start somewhere. And where you start completely differs by company and by their growth rate and how they manage incentives today. So let's, for example, let's say we're working with a company and today the status quo is 5% of profit are distributed, or employees typically receive 5% of their compensation during the Christmas holidays or during the holidays. So one of the key elements of this is you're going to have to create a bonus pool. So say, for example, that company historically has had $1 million worth of profit. You know, the business owner may decide, well, what I'm willing to do for a bonus pool is I'm willing to pay out the next $100,000 after my million in EBITDA. So they earn 1.1 and the $100,000 is distributed. So the costs and the benefits, I think, dramatically differ based on the situation in the business. And what's hard is you can't go backwards, right? You can't go to people and say, I'm going to cut your pay 20%. That's just not going to fly. But what you can do is, in a given year, you can say, okay, new incentive plan, this is what it looks like. First 100,000 after the million is going to be distributed, and or however you decide to devise it. Dana, it really all depends on the circumstances.
Okay. And the review time?
The review time, again, it really depends on the corporate culture. I've seen everything from, you know, annual to semi-annual to quarterly to monthly. And I would say that what you want to do, one of the things you want to do is make sure that your performance reviews are not tied directly to raises, that there should be a different mindset. Performance reviews are about improvement. So some managers like to talk about improvement quite often, maybe quarterly. Others they don't want to add that level of burden and formality, and they'll do it less often. But I would say, you know, annual is the very least, and hopefully more often than that.
Is there any thought as to modeling of getting away from the annual increase so it's really based on performance and improvement versus everybody's expectation of June
right.
1st, we get the...
Well, going back to my example where it was the 95-5, if you were going to put in an incentive plan, what you might decide to do, I'm not necessarily advocating for it, but it's just the way sometimes it plays out, is you freeze the salaries in the current year, and in every year over the course of 4 or 5 years, you increase the richness of the bonus pool. So you get away from the annual increase, and you move that 5% of pay up to 20% of pay or whatever, so that the bonus pool is sizable enough to influence the behavior of people. Any other questions before?
It's a huge mindset. So it's very important to include this topic in strategic planning, because this is going to have a major impact.
Yeah, when we do strategic planning, we usually do scorecarding within the same process, because
mm-hmm.
we want the scorecard to be a derivative of the strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as I mentioned earlier, you know, I see the discussion of strategic planning might be we'd like to move towards incentives, but I don't like doing it all at one time.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
So I think, you know, six is maybe the most important thing, is you need to make sure the system you create is a win for the business and it's a win for the employees. I've seen many instances where that's been possible. And once you demonstrate that, that's when you can get the buy-in. Also, I'm very often asked about number eight, you know, do you do the calendar reviews or do you do once a year? If your intent is to do scorecarding and pay for performance specifically, I think once per year is easier because you're calculating all the numbers at the same time and you're distributing the bonus pool. If your culture is calendar and that's the way the organization likes to play it, then you can certainly make that work as well.
Wow. I can see why you started off the discussion today of got to handle this in a certain way.
You absolutely do, because there's always going to be people who feel threatened by it. But you know, I just go back to what I said earlier. You know, when you're an entrepreneur and you're running a really complex enterprise, there's a lot of variables to consider. And one of them is your labor costs just have to be in alignment with the business. And if you don't have a system that works this way, you know, your only choice should your demand should you cut back on demand is to lay people off. And this actually, I find this to be, not only does it motivate people well, but it helps you manage a business more effectively. So what other questions do we have?
Another question is, for a smaller firm, you may need to do this offline, what would the cost be for the quote consulting of designing scorecards and bonus systems? Is it and that's probably an offline discussion, or is that something?
Yeah, that probably is an offline discussion.
Okay.
To be honest, I don't really do that kind of work implementing the systems for the clients. I, you know, refer that to other people, but I'd be happy to do that if someone wants to reach out to me.
Okay. Another question came in. In states where hourly employees must be paid overtime at a rate where incentives need to be in the calculation of overtime, is this just done for hourly?
Right. That's a big hairy mess, what the states are doing. But that would be true whether you use the, you know, subjective bonuses or you use the more structured scorecarding system. So that's a great point, and that's true, but I don't think it, to me, if that is, you're governed by that limitation, I don't think that influences whether you do the scorecarding and the paper performance or not. It's how you manage it. Might be a little bit different.
Okay. That's huge.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to open up the line in just a second so you can talk directly to Mark. We've had feedback in the past from doing open lines. People didn't want their voices recorded on the questions. So let me just shut down this section of our discussion, then we'll open up the line. You'll see Mark's contact information on the screen if you want to contact Mark directly. You'll also see for our October 16th open line program, how to invent and execute your company's future for 2013 and beyond. You can sign up today, reserve your space. If you want other people to attend, please let us know. We'll sign them up. Each of you will be getting a recording and a PowerPoint for today's program. So if you want to share it with others within your organization or within your association, please feel free to do so. Mark and I want to thank you for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that have been shared. My goodness, Mark, you're is outstanding. If you'd like to talk to Mark about specifics about your industry, your team, or setting up some one-to-one time with Mark, just feel free to email Mark or call him. The information shared today is a property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in Santa Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. Again, I'm going to open the line in just one second. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, please let us know. We want to thank you, each of you, for joining us for our Keeping on Track open line program. Have a great day, and hold the line. Let me just turn the recording off, and we'll be right back.